At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
The Sean Diddy Combs federal trial has been nothing short of astonishing, pulling back the curtain on a scandalous blend of celebrity power, explosive accusations, and complex legal strategies. But what's been especially intriguing is a move made by Combs' defense team, boldly choosing not to call any witnesses, including Combs himself. It's an approach that leaves the jury solely with the prosecution's case, particularly daring them to find holes in the narrative prosecutors painstakingly created. Now, we've heard the disturbing allegations, racketeering, sex trafficking, kidnapping, and even arson. But the prosecution recently stunned everyone by dropping two significant charges, arson and kidnapping. Why? That's precisely the question that's on everyone's mind as we get to the end of the Sean Diddy Combs trial. And let me note, we are recording this on the day of closing arguments. So by the time you see this and this analyzation, they may already have a verdict. We may be waiting on a verdict. We just don't know. But this is kind of standing alone to that. It's more so a look back on the trial itself to break it all down. And I'd love to hear your opinion on where the trial has been and where it is going in terms of a verdict or the future after that verdict. Tell me in the comment section on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi if you're not already there. If you're on the podcast platform, hit subscribe there and be sure to check out our YouTube channel. Joining me today to unpack these baffling strategic moves and the larger implications for the trial is Eric Faddist, a seasoned defense attorney and former prosecutor. Eric's unique experience on both sides of the courtroom provides critical insights into what may be happening behind the closed doors. As someone who's navigated countless trials, Eric understands that courtroom dramas like this are rarely as simple as they appear. With high-profile cases, juries often face the dizzying array of accusations and evidence, making clarity and simplicity a prized tactic. Today, Eric and I are going to dive into exactly what's at play here, examining whether the defense's silence projects strength or signals of weakness, and how a sudden dismissal of severe charges might affect the jury's perception. We're also exploring whether the public, unable to see or hear trial proceedings directly, is getting a clear picture of merely a skewed snapshot of this case. Here we go. Understanding this trial is far more complex and intriguing than the headlines suggest.
Now, it's a risk. It's a bold move. Does it signal confidence? Does it say that the defense believes the prosecution hasn't met their burden? It's their job to put on the evidence and meet that legal threshold. They haven't done it. We're not going to help them from the defense side. Or is it some kind of tacit admission that they don't have a lot of folks who are going to back up their narrative? And so let's give it to the jury and hope for the best.
Do you find it hard to really grasp what the strategy is in this case, since we can't hear the arguments in court? We can't hear or see how it's been going. We've just been getting reports from people. And obviously the words that we're hearing, I mean, it sounds horrible, the stuff that he was up to. But there's also questions of, did they prove their case on all of the charges? And we'll get into that in just a few seconds. But is it more difficult to determine, you think, on the outside for an attorney or just a layperson to really feel what's going on in there?
Totally. So, Tony, the federal courts have this policy where they don't allow video recording as a general rule on any of their cases. And so, that sort of conflicts with the constitutional right to a public trial. And In fact, courts have said the public has an interest in knowing what's going on, especially in a high-profile, nationally publicized case like this. And so we're sort of relegated to these secondhand reports and what have you, but there have been a lot of them. There are journalists in the courtroom, and so we are receiving information, albeit kind of secondhand.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing about, you know, a public trial, and when they invented that and made that statement and made that the rule, obviously it wasn't a broad broadcast trial. It was public. So, I mean, what we're getting essentially is the same sort of reporting we would have had, you know, many years ago by basically print reports, and then it turns into audio and all of that. But it is just, you know, people writing down their notes and coming back and reporting on it. We get the information now much quicker, you know, right after they walk out of the courtroom. But it's still the same sort of thing. Is that something that, you know, do you think needs updating here in this country? Should we have federal courts allow public to not only, you know, see it if they happen to be geographically close by, but those who can't be? Should this been something that the public as a whole would have or should have been able to see to go down?
You know, the courts are very slow to reacting to advances in technology, advances in societal norms and understanding, that kind of thing. And so in my appraisal, what's the benefit of the court not allowing video to show these trials when nearly all state courts are open to that? What interest are they serving in doing that that would outweigh the public and the public's, you know, receiving information about very important cases that implicate some really weighty societal issues? I just don't see it. Let the cameras in there. Who cares?
Yeah, I would agree. I don't really quite, I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, well, we're going to keep operating on this the same way they operate on many other principles that have been proven to not be the best of ideas. Like the parental thing with kids and when they have one parent that's abusive, but it's best for reunification, not just keeping that kid away from the abuser. Reunification eventually, if we can make that. Like, no, not always the best idea. But I digress. So we have closing arguments that are going on basically as we speak right now. But let's talk about the case itself. Prosecutors, just right before going to closing arguments, dropped the arson and kidnapping charges against Diddy. Give me your insight. Why did they do that?
This was a curious move, and I think it might come back to hurt him. You know, my apprehension is that, you know, you have a case as a prosecutor, it looks good on paper, and you think, oh gosh, I can prove all of these serious things. And then you get in that gauntlet in trial. That's not always how it goes. And so I'm wondering if the prosecution wants the jury to focus on just the most compelling, the strongest potential grounds for the RICO charge, and eliminated these other less strong grounds. However, it could look like they're kind of surrendering, that they're kind of saying, hey, we told you we could prove this stuff, but we actually can't. But trust us when we say we can prove these other crimes.
Well, I mean, is that part of the case here, considering once they started going, one of their witnesses did go missing, and that witness was supposedly going to be kind of backing up a lot of their case with the RICO and the kidnapping, and since they really couldn't have the witness there for that, they had to kind of drop it. And I guess, and then the rest of the case, the Diddy and or Cassie area of all this, we certainly saw sexual coercion and abuse and things like that, but I don't know if it crosses the line to kidnapping. What about any other piece of this trial? Did you see that there was anything that would lead to anyone to believe that, or was it just really not quite there, reasonable doubt?
You know, for me, the whole presentation by the government, this is just my opinion, it's been a bit underwhelming. You know, going into this, they came in guns a-blazing talking about arson and kidnapping and sex trafficking and people being drugged and these sort of like, you know, Caligula-esque orgies with all of these stars. And that's not really what the evidence has been. And so I'm just wondering how the jury is going to be impacted by this 11th hour change. You know, are they going to say that, gosh, the government kind of, you know, made a lot to do about this case, and then they didn't really have the goods? Or are they going to say, hey, we're going to be laser focused on these other grounds for RICO that are more provable and that might spell doom for Diddy?
Is that, I mean, that's got to be a difficult thing sometimes, and you got to figure out, I guess, who your jury is and how they're going to react to whatever you're going to put in front of them. Because, I mean, we've seen in many cases, and I'm sure you have seen in far, far, far more cases than me, they can be kind of confusing, or they can be confused, maybe I should say, even when the jury forms to most would not be that confusing. But if you don't look at him all the time and you're not used to seeing him, yeah, I mean, it takes a little to figure this out. Is that something, I mean, they're really concerned with here of let's make this as simple as possible. Let's not let them just give a couple light charges and walk away. Let's have them really, the options are stark. It's either you're going to be checking the boxes and stuff that's going to put him away for at least 15 years or more, or you're not. There's nothing really, it seems, light on the table here. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think absolutely. And it's an important point because the RICO charge itself is terribly confusing. The jury instructions that I've seen for that charge are difficult for a seasoned attorney to follow, let alone a layperson juror. And so perhaps the government wanted to simplify this for the jury and say, hey, you know, there aren't 20 moving parts. Now there are six. And that's more manageable for a jury because when there's confusion in that deliberation room, sometimes confusion translates into doubt, which can translate into reasonable doubt.
Do they ask enough questions when they need to ask enough questions from back of that jury room, just from your experience, you know, as a prosecutor or a defense attorney, because you'll see both ends of it. Have you seen more where they come back and ask the right questions or more where they come back with a verdict? And it's like, if you had just asked this question, you would have understood this better and it wouldn't have led you to that decision.
You know, on the whole, in my experience, the jurors ask important questions while they're back there, including clarifying questions about the jury instructions, the charges, the verdict form, that kind of thing. Because if they don't, and if there's some kind of misunderstanding, you can get inconsistent verdicts within a trial,
yeah.
And that itself can be a ground for appeal. So it's really important that the juries understand what they're supposed to be doing back there.
As we wrap up this conversation with Eric Faddis, it's clear the strategy behind the trial is a carefully calculated chess match. Or is it checkers? Or is it more like Trouble? Or Chutes and Ladders? Or Guess Who? It's a good question. It's such a chaotic case. I think chess is far more of a science than the world of Diddy. Every single move in this courtroom and counter moves can sway a jury dramatically. The prosecution's unexpected decision to drop serious charges like kidnapping and arson could either sharpen their focus or create unintended doubt. Eric highlighted a critical point, the inherent complexity of a RICO charge itself, with jury instructions often proving challenging for even seasoned attorneys. The risk of confusion is significant. Its complexity can cut both ways, either solidifying reasonable doubt or making the jury more reliant on the prosecutor's simplified narrative. Another dimension worth considering, something we didn't fully explore, is the emotional toll on jurors who must sort through graphic evidence and unsettling testimony. Jurors aren't just legal evaluators, they're human beings tasked with the untangling, harrowing stories about coercion, manipulation, and abuse allegedly orchestrated by a beloved celebrity figure. The psychological weight of that task cannot be understated and may play a crucial role in their ultimate decision-making. Moreover, Eric raised an essential issue regarding transparency in federal courts. Is it time we revisit the policies restricting televised trials? Could greater public access promote better accountability and understanding? It's a debate that resonates far beyond this case, challenging us to rethink how justice is observed and reported in our digital age. Whatever the outcome, one thing remains crystal clear. This trial is a pivotal moment, not just for Sean Combs, but for how we collectively address celebrity accountability, transparency, and justice in America. As we, at this moment in time, wait for a verdict, or maybe let that verdict soak in by the time you're hearing this, we'll keep watching closely, unpacking each development and seeking clarity amid the complexity. Thanks again to Eric for his invaluable insights, and thank you for joining us in navigating the trial of Diddy. Let me know in the comment section on YouTube what your thoughts are. If you're not on YouTube yet, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and find us there. You can even subscribe there now to a premium channel on YouTube. Yes, we have the regular subscription. That's great. Anybody can do it. That's free. Or you can go premium and get access to our videos days, sometimes weeks before they're released to the public. There's a lot of them, and you get in on it as we create them when you become a premium subscriber on YouTube. So do check that out. Or you can become a premium on Apple Podcasts as well if you prefer just the audio version of the show. Hit subscribe wherever you are. And please, in the comment section, let us know what you think. Until next time, for all of us here at True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.